We're gonna skate to one song only.
Build this book that, again, is titled Counterfeit Amateurs. So we're really looking forward to having him on. It's a step we're taking in 2012 to kind of get our listeners, you know, to get some different voices out there, and such a well-respected voice in terms of Dr. Sack. He's been in USA Today. He's been on Good Morning America. He's been all over the place because he is an authority on a lot of things that we see happening in college sports that just haven't started happening now. We think about the pay-for-play scandal with Cam Newton, stuff that happened at University of Miami. You know, go back to SMU, what happened in the 80s when Dickerson was there. Again, Sack has been a person who has covered all this stuff and has a great opinion. And again, he's an authority on these sorts of things.
And I think, you know, at the time when it was, you know, we're at the height of the bowl season with a lot of great games. And you know, I've talked a lot about, you know, one of the pushbacks on why we don't have one of the hidden things of why we don't have a playoff system is the benefits that happen with the bowls. These are opportunities, great development opportunities for institutions. If you see that, if you ever go and look at, go to Alumni Association for any major university in the bowl, you look at how they have their week, bowl week set up, is really designed to increase giving in a different way. It creates business opportunities, expanding recruitment. And so there's a lot of leverage that comes off of this, a lot of money that, beyond the money that they get from participating in the bowl, that, you know, you don't even talk about all the other income that's generated as a part of that bowl experience. So this is just, I think the timing for this is great, and we're definitely happy to have Dr. Sack with us on the show next week. So stay tuned, come in. This is about the hot. I told you, 2012, we try to take it to another level, and definitely looking forward to it. Well, you know how we get down. You know we got to start with the funky editorial, so we'll kick it off like this.
Fellas, one thing we need to say. Yeah. Shall we say it, y'all?
Yeah.
Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
yeah.
Coleman, Ryan,
say
it.
Yeah.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Well, the funky editorial tonight is about Cam Newton and his quote in ESPN magazine when, you know, they really kind of talked to him a little bit about, you know, his critics and whether or not racism was involved. And, you know, his quote was really, he said, I can't sit up here and look at it like, oh, man, my critics are racist. I blame Jamarcus Russell and to some degree Vince Young. If you have an opportunity to make that kind of money doing something you love to do, why would you screw it up? I am trying to be a trailblazer. If Baylor's Robert Griffin decides to come out, I want people to say he can be the next Cam Newton instead of he's going to be the next Jamarcus Russell. Woo, that one has so much to it.
Wow.
Sociologists are just trying to unpack this in a real, they just don't know what to do with this thing. Fellas, the question that I have, you know, what do you think Cam was trying to say? And is it something he should be saying? Is it accurate? Should he be putting Jamarcus Russell's name out there, Vince Young's name out there? Phil, let me start with you. Give me some feedback on it.
Well, if I'm Jamarcus Russell, I'm thinking like Andre, who was the guy? Who was the guy who got on Chris Webber the other day? Was it Perkins? Keep your name out my mouth. You know, out your mouth. Keep my name out your mouth. Perkins came at Webber. But to answer your question, I mean, I think it's a really interesting point. Let's take a step back. There is some truth to that. In terms of the critics last year, and again, I put the blame on the critics, okay? But the critics last year, I mean, they were flat out lazy for just simply making comparisons to Cam Newton with other black quarterbacks, such as Vince Young and Jamarcus Russell. I mean, that was a very lazy, incompetent way of doing it. I think Cam does have a point. You know, to what what's the verse? To much is given, much is expected. I mean, Jamarcus Russell, you know, unfortunately didn't do a whole lot with his opportunity. And, you know, people can say for whatever reason it didn't happen, he was with the Raiders, perhaps he didn't have the most support out there. But from Cam's point of view, I mean, this is a perception management type of thing. This is a brand management decision. And we always want our athletes to be more outspoken. You know, we want them to be more like Jim Brown and less like Jordan, you know, in terms of taking a position. And so from Cam's standpoint, this is a huge risk, you know, for making this kind of bold statement. But I don't think that he's the only person thinking this way. I think there's plenty of cats, plenty of players in the NFL that, you know, these are their thoughts. You know, Jamarcus Russell and Vince Young, you know, based on bad decisions they made, really, you know, unfortunately, will feed to the negative stereotype for players such as Robert Griffin coming up and Cam Newton. So, again, I think it's very risky. I blame the critics more than I blame Jamarcus Russell and Vince Young. But I think Cam does have a good point.
Mo, how do you feel about it?
Well, without reading the whole article, I won't get totally down on Mr. Deuce quite yet, but I definitely think I don't need to see the need why he had to kind of bring down the players in the wake of what he's trying to say. I mean, I understand he's trying to, you know, put some pride in himself and put a lot on his shoulders, but I don't know why he needs to bring some of the players into that situation, into that story. There's been plenty of, you know, bust out there on the quarterback front, especially. So not just on black quarterbacks, but, you know, a lot of big high-name picks have had a lot of bust. So you can't really, I'm not sure where I see the race angle coming in there quite yet. But I don't see why he can bring names, if you will, why you got to name names. And, you know, Vince Young is still in the league and, you know, has had some success as well. You know, and some of the things he's done, hasn't had the superstar success, but, you know, he still has had some success, and I think he's got a winning record as a quarterback. So, yeah, it's a little pretty amazing that he kind of goes that far out. You can tell he's, you know, he's still a young guy. He's still learning. You know, he's obviously he's very confident in his abilities and some of the stuff he's did this year, obviously, is backing up what he's been saying. But I think it's maybe a little bit in front of himself and some of the things he's going on with right now.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, as folks who can, you know, who experience it, you know, there's a code sometimes in the black community, like don't air the dirty laundry. Did he break the code? Is that part of the issue that folks might have who are particularly folks in the black community? Or is it, you know, is it about, did he make it a point about, look, we got to have a higher standard if you're coming in? And I heard Trent Dilfer talk about this today, that a lot of quarterbacks come in, and it's a lot like when I talk to students when they come to college. It's like they think they're working hard, but they haven't realized what it really takes, how hard you need to work to be great. So they think they come out of college with a work ethic, but then don't realize what it takes to be a Warren Moon, what it takes to be, Marino, what it takes to work at that level, what it takes to be a Brady. You know, they don't absolutely know what it takes to be that, and are they putting time in the film room? And some of the criticism that people like Russell have had have been, you know, part of the invention was that was part of it was that they weren't putting the time in the craft like they needed to. We heard Michael Vick come out here saying that when he was in Atlanta, he didn't spend enough time looking at film. He relied a lot on his athleticism. He didn't really study the game like he's doing now. Is he sending a message to the next generation about, you know, if we're going to come in, we need to come in with our A game? What's wrong with that?
Well, I mean, this is just a very sticky situation. It's a very sticky situation. And, you know, his statement in terms of Robert Griffin, you know, he can be the next Cam Newton. Wait a minute now. Wait a minute, Cam. You know, during the combine, you came out with some of this third-person stuff, okay? you know, now you're bringing it back. Come on now. Come on now. Because here's the thing. When we talk about rookie quarterbacks or quarterbacks that are being evaluated in the draft, we use names typically in a good way of players who have developed and become winners. Okay, the next Peyton Manning. Well, if Peyton Manning just would have had that record-breaking rookie season, such as Cam just had, but didn't do much after that, which, again, Cam hasn't had the opportunity to do that or not, we wouldn't be talking about a quarterback being the next Peyton Manning just based on his rookie campaign. So from that perspective, I kind of have a problem of Cam taking this approach that, yeah, I want to be the next Cam Newton. Wait a minute. You know, Akili Smith actually had a pretty good rookie year, okay? So let's not get too carried away too fast.
But still, I mean, you know, building on the expectation and the standard, is there a problem with, like, look, we know what kind of high stakes this is. We know that this isn't a fair. You know, Chris Rock had a great quote or something about diversity of coaches in pro sports, and he said we know when we arrive when you can be average and be black and still get a job, like because white coaches get recycled all the time, and so have we reached it when Jamarcus Russell can get another job? Is that progress? And that's one of the things about, because when you drop, do you drop as far? And that's, so, you know, as he's saying, it's high stakes. You don't have a lot of opportunities. If you don't get this first time, there is no second. You know, you just fall. So I understand what being the next champion, he's young, but the idea that we got to come in this thing with a focus. Yeah, we got to come up with this because we don't. And part of that is probably come from his conversation with Warren Moon. You know, Warren did a lot of mentoring with him, and he understood the struggle that Warren had to go through. So, you know, what about that part beyond the fact that he talked about being the next Cam Newton?
Well, I would say that. Oh. Yeah, I just jump in real quick and just say that. You know, I mean, obviously there is a. I do see a noble part of this in terms of he is trying to set an expectation and kind of raise a bar, and he wants to say he wants to be a great player. He wants to be a player that's going to be looked at as somebody who is going to be mentioned as somebody to aspire to. So I do give him some credit for that. He's going to put some blame on himself and put some onus on himself to be that kind of player. So he's obviously going to have to back this up if he's looking at himself in that kind of light. But, I think it's hard to say what, you know, other people are going through. And, you know, Michael Vick, and he said, mentioned him before about some things he said after the fact about how he wasn't as prepared. But, you know, without knowing what happened to Jamarcus Russell, without knowing what happened to Vince Young, you know, in specifics, if it really was a lack of preparedness, you know, there's, you know, other quarterbacks who've had some success, you know, Dante Culpepper and people like that who've, you know, had some runs and made some things happen at times in the NFL. So, it's hard to say what exactly is that thing. You know, it's hard to be a quarterback in the NFL, so to kind of just kind of put those guys down without knowing the true story behind what exactly happened. Except, you know, you mentioned Jamarcus Russell was in a very bad Oakland team that, you know, for a long time was pretty much down. So you're not sure with the environment that they had the support around them to help them to be successful as well. So,
and that's one of the things that Trent said, was that part of creating a successful quarterback is part of the environment and the system in a sense. Because the question he was responding to was one about, you know, this whole thing about in Green Bay, about is Rodgers a system quarterback? And he said, well, all successful quarterbacks are system. But it's their ability to play above the system. And a lot of that starts with how coaches bring people in. So that's another part of it is that under Jamarcus and some of the cases he might be looking at, you know, how much is the blame to the supporting the supportive environment around coaching and transition do we pay attention to? I think that's a point to consider as part of this. What do you think the backlash is going to be for Cam with the media? I'll let y'all take that for a little bit.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, this came out 4 or 5 days ago. I'm not sure if it's going to get much worse for Cam. You know, kind of thinking of what I said previously, without a Vince Young, Cam Newton may or may not have received the attention and having the flexibility of the playbook being conformed to him versus the team conforming to playbook, vice versa. Because, you know, in Tennessee, Vince Young didn't get that support from Jeff Fisher, or at least, I mean, that's the perception there. Fisher didn't do a lot of things that enhanced, in terms of the playbook, that enhanced Vince's game. But in Carolina, I think a big part of Cam's success is that the staff there has done that for Cam. So pardon me, I'm a little bit uncomfortable. You know, now I'm thinking about it a bit more in terms of him putting Vince Young out there. I think you bring up a good point, D, of airing dirty laundry. You know, so you know, I think from a national media standpoint, you're going to see a lot of balance there. You know, yes, there's some good points here, there's some bad points there, but that's about it. I don't see many people coming out, you know, taking a huge stance in terms of criticizing Cam at this point.
Well, I would say the backlash might be from players. You know, again, the players have kind of that code, I think, to try to, you know, protect each other and, you know, put another player down. You don't really see that happen very often, especially, you know, maybe names of people kind of put somebody else down for something like this, especially. So it could be some backlash from his peers for him to kind of call out the players, especially, you know, for African-American players to say that, you know, hey, you know, why you have to take a step to actually kind of call out some of the guys who, you know, for better or for worse, they were trailblazers for you because, you know, they were picked and they said maybe they had success that, you know, that maybe they should have or people thought they should have had, but, you know, it's kind of still, it's not a lot of black quarterbacks who've been taken with high picks. So, I think that could be some backlash in terms of the players and some of his peers in terms of some things he come out with.
Yeah. Do y'all see that, you know, as Cam goes in, or I think like the Robert Griffin III, you know, as he starts to interview and starts to look at this stuff, how do you think he might take this in terms of his own mindset in hearing some of this stuff? What do you think that might be the impact on him?
Did you say Cam?
On Robert Griffin III? Did you hear me?
Yeah. Well, I think RG3 is interesting. You know, I've heard him about four or five interviews since he's won the Heisman, which was only, 2 weeks ago. And the question he gets quite a bit is, so if you had to pick one quarterback in the league, you know, that – you think your game is like, who would it be? And I think he's very careful to not only select African American quarterbacks. You know, I heard him respond saying, well, you know, I see part of my game in what Cam Newton does, I see part of my game in what Tom Brady does, you know, I'd like to strive to do more of what Peyton Manning has done in the past. And, you know, and I think that's very, very wise in terms of the approach to take, because I think a mistake he would make is casting himself, you know, into a box, which we see that critics already did last year to Cam. And hopefully because of Cam's success, I think this is what Cam was trying to get at in terms of being a trailblazer, that scouts and critics and whatnot will put more due diligence in and not limit African-American quarterbacks to other African-American quarterbacks. You know, I was listening to Doug Gottlieb the other day, his radio show, and he was saying that for white basketball players, you know, we do the same thing. It's the same stereotype. It's the same stigma. Why do we always have to compare Steve Nash to Cousy? Why do we always have to compare, you know, him to other great white point guards? You know, Nash and Stockton, where Nash's game is probably, you know, better suited to you know, someone else. So I think it works both ways. As far as quarterbacks, you know, I think this is a position that, you know, is under the microscope more than any other position in sports, arguably. So they're going to get scrutinized at a commiserate level as well. So, you know, I hear what Cam's saying. I think in this day and age, it's just really tough to open up this can of worms, because there's really no way to come out of it smelling well.
Well, do you think part of his response was, the question was about, did he think his critics were racist? So was he trying to back away from falling into that trap and didn't want to start calling other folks? So he tried to figure out how to get out of that. And you know, when you get that kind of question, how should he have? Because it was really about, you know, you really proven a lot of people wrong. And do you think it started out as based and founded in racism?
Yeah, again, without I had an opportunity to see the whole story situation, but I'm not. I mean, he's got a lot of baggage, obviously, coming in. You know, he's got a lot of, you know, scandal, if you will, from the situation that happened with Auburn. And, could there be some part of racism there, possibly? But, I mean, I think, you know, any player who comes in with a lot of kind of things that he had going on, I think there's a lot of negative surrounding him already. So I think a lot of people don't want to see him succeed or were very down on him because of the situation that happened at Auburn and all the alleged things that happened. And, you know, I give him a lot of credit because, you know, I said last year when he won the Heisman that, you know, for him to win the Heisman with all the turmoil that's around him and to play as good as he did last year in Auburn and win the national championship, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, for him to be picked first like he was. A lot of people were debating that, but I was like, if he can handle that and play as good as he did with all the kind of turmoil and negative things that happened going on around him, then he could definitely handle, you know, the NFL. So I wasn't surprised, you know, to be as successful as he was in terms of putting up numbers and those kind of things. But I think it's really, I wouldn't say racism for me. I think it's kind of more about the situation that happened around him. And a lot of people were probably, not rooting for him to succeed because of some of the things they believed that happened when he was in college.
Well, I think, you know, what we can say about Cam is that Cam has been electrifying on and off the field. I know that I had been arguing about, so I feel like I don't have a problem. He vindicated me because I know I was arguing on the show about what I thought he could be as a pro, and he's exceeded even my expectations. He's trying to find his voice. You know, I think we have to remember that this is a young person. You know, I work with a lot of young people at this age, and they are constantly trying to find their voice. And he just happens to be doing it in a public space,
that's right.
Which, you know, causes a whole bunch of other, repercussions when you do it in a public space like he's doing it. But I think that, you know, to learn to find his voice, I think he just needs to continue to get the mentorship. Hopefully he's still working with Warren, and he can reflect on how it came out and try to figure out how to move it forward. I'm excited that we have RG3 in the mix. And I think, you know, this is a guy who wants to be an attorney, I believe. I mean, he's a sharp cat, very cerebral. You know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they evaluate him. What do you say?
He's already graduated as well.
He's already graduated. So, I mean, this is a guy that's coming in with, a lot of just a whole set of tools, I think, that he could continue to take the game to the next level. Before we transition into our segment, you know, while we're talking about, you know, a little bit of you know, kind of, you know, the quarterbacks and, you know, what's been happening and some of that, with the bowl season, I mean, looking at some of the play that some of these top quarterbacks have had, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to watch a lot of the bowls because there's been a lot of sports activity happening over the last week, but you know, you had a chance to see RG3. You had a chance to see Luck. What's their? You had a chance to see, you know, some of the other top quarterbacks, prospects. You know, what do you think about this class of quarterbacks coming out after seeing some of them play in the bowl season?
I mean, I like what I saw last night between Luck and Wheaton. I don't know if Braden Wheaton's age is going to hurt him or help him more. I think it'll be a factor. But honestly, I've been impressed with him all year. Luck was pretty darn accurate last night. I mean, I was impressed in terms of what he did in the two-minute drill in both halves. this is only the second time I got the opportunity to see him play. The first time being against the USC team, a good USC team that he came back and beat on the final drive as well. Overall, I've been pretty impressed. I wish I would have had a chance to see Matt Barkley play in a bowl situation, but quite honestly, USC treated most of their big high-profile games this year as bowls. So honestly, I think the steal out of this draft may be a Whedon. It may be a Matt Barkley, somebody who's coming in. Actually, I think all these quarterbacks are going to come in a bit underneath the radar because of the huge shadow that that Luck is casting.
Barkley, they decided. Did he decide to stay, or he decided?
He's coming out.
Huh?
Well, he's gonna stay. Yeah, he's gonna stay. Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
he's gonna stay. So I think that's gonna definitely alter a little bit. But I agree with you. I mean, I think this has a quarterback class. I mean, even when you know we were talking about Wilson from Wisconsin. I mean, I think there could be some steals. I call this a GM draft. You know, when you got some loaded folks, there's gonna be some steals because everybody's gonna have their eye on Luck and a couple of the top guys, and somebody's gonna slip right through there, and they're gonna get somebody in this draft. I think this is going to be a real interesting draft in terms of, you know, where some of these second tier quarterbacks go, who I think can still have an impact, on teams in the NFL. Well, what we're going to do here is we're going to transition into, you know, our favorite segment, 5 on the black hand side. Let me hear it.
5, on the black hand side.
All right, this 5 on the black hand side is going to really be about, you know the NFL. We love to talk about it. We're going to make some observations. Our first one is on firings. Fair or unfair? You got Raheem Morris, you got Spagnuolo, you got Napoleon's kind of getting knocked out of the box. So what does that mean for Peyton and where they're going to go there? Norv didn't get fired. A.J. Smith kept his job. The general manager in Chicago, our guy, they finally let Angelo go. Talk to me about what's going on in the NFL. What are your initial things when you think about these firings? Thinking like someone like Raheem Morris, like if seems like they were waiting to pull the trigger on him after having a great season last year. A guy like Norv Turner keeps his job. I mean, what do you guys think? I'll start with you, Mo.
Well, with Radio Raheem, I think it definitely was a little bit of a quick trigger there. The one thing that I think it's a couple things that happened there this year. One was Josh Freeman. It looks like he took definitely a step back. And, you know, his team, after winning 10 wins last year, not getting that playoffs, you know, was a tough pill to swallow, I'm sure. They didn't play as well this year. They probably had a tougher schedule this year as well. And, you know, they're in a tough division right now, dealing with Atlanta and dealing with the Saints. So similar to what the Bears are going through right now, you have two of the teams that are playoff caliber teams that are good playoff teams. And the one thing I saw from him, though, a 10-game losing streak, though, that's a tough thing, I think, for the NFL to go through. And it seemed like the team kind of was giving up because they were getting blown out a lot of those games, whereas in the past they might have lost some close games. But something definitely was amiss there because, you know, Freeman definitely took a step back this year, and it seemed like they just were not playing with much fire enthusiasm to kind of, you know, they could have a down year after going 10-6, but to lose like 10 in a row and then get blown out of some of those games, it just shows that they weren't up to snuff, or they weren't, you know, prepared or ready to go. So I could see that how he was fired, especially losing 10 in a row in the NFL is a tough thing to swallow. A young guy who I think probably has a great future ahead of him, but as we see with some of these young hirings, you know, with the guy out of Denver who took over McDaniel and now Morris. The young guys probably didn't get as much rope as they would have been, you know, more established guys like a Norv Turner, but they probably had less rope to deal with because they were a little bit more of a risky hire to kind of get a young guy in there.
Okay. Phil.
They call it Black Monday. They call it Black Monday with all the firings around the NFL. You know, I was actually at the Rams 49er game a couple days ago, living in the St. Louis area. And I'm not sure if you guys saw the highlight, but the 49ers lined up to kick a field goal. They probably had the ball maybe under 10, 15, 20-yard line. And Michael Crabtree,
oh, yeah, I saw this.
Back, he never went off the field, but he lined up really wide as a receiver. The ball was on the right hash. She lined up outside the numbers on the left sideline. And he didn't get covered. And so the holder saw this. Instead of putting the ball down to get kicked for 3 points, he threw it to Crabtree, and there was nobody within 20 yards of him, and Crabtree went in for a touchdown. Everybody around me, probably 20, 30 people, just kind of looked at each other and said, you know what, that's probably the straw that breaks Spagnuolo's back right there. Because that was kind of, I mean, that was so ironic that it happened, because the biggest criticism of Spagnuolo is that his teams get out-coached, they get out-prepared, and he doesn't make enough quality in-game adjustments. So I wasn't surprised about Spagnuolo. But Norv Turner's been a guy, again, we did this show a couple of months ago, and we highlighted coaches that they don't get it going, they need to go. I was the first one. I mean, I couldn't even wait for Marcus to get done with that question. I spit it out. Norv Turner, they don't make the playoffs. He's got to go. Okay, but I'm sitting here and I'm almost admire the Charger organization for sticking with AJ Smith, who's the general manager out there, and Norv Turner. You know, they came out today and said that both of them will keep their jobs. And in this culture where you don't get it done in one, maybe two seasons, you're gone. You know, I think about a coach like Bill Belichick and see how the Cleveland Browns weren't so impatient with him when he missed the playoffs. They lost in the playoffs and they got rid of him. And just take a look at what they missed out on. So, in a way, I kind of wish, and again, I feel backwards saying this, but I kind of wish that the Rams would have given Spagnuolo one more year. He was there for 3 years. They had a very poor year his first year. They just missed the playoffs last year. I believe they won 7 games, which was a big improvement. And then they had a poor year this year. My thoughts are with Sam Bradford and some of the young players they have, but specifically Bradford, okay? So when Bradford comes back for his third season next year, this will be the third offensive coordinator that he'll have. This will be the second head coach that he'll have. And to me, it's just looking like Alex Smith all over again with the 49ers. So, you know, it's really easy to say these coaches have to go, but when I look at what San Diego's done, I'm thinking to myself, I mean, this loyalty here may pay off, especially when you see that they have a pretty strong core there.
And that was the thing that I kind of struggled with, because I've always said, you know, I'm a Steelers fan. And one of the things I admire about the Steelers is, I mean, you think about, I mean, Bill Cowher had, you know, three losing seasons in a row. He had some tough losses in AFC championship games, some games at home, heartbreaking, and they stuck with him. And part of it is you start to build a culture around and helping players understand that the coach is going to be in charge. That helps you to really have some leverage over the players. And so I've always been a person that's advocated for that type of culture in a organization in professional sports. You know, try to find the right coach and the right general manager that you can really pair up. Like, spend your time really looking for that person, and then really try to ride with them for a while and start to establish a program and a culture and a style of drafting and all those things, particularly with small markets. And so I was, when Norv didn't get fired, I expected him to go because there's nothing, he's had several coaching chances. So you have a resume with him in a way that, you know, with someone like Spagnuolo or for Morris, who, you know, you give them one more year to kind of get it right, you know, because it's, you know, just adjusting to being the coach and getting everything, getting that daily schedule together. It takes a while in anything you do. Give them a chance to really to kind of get there. And so, you know, losing organizations, if you look at it, they, just like you said, they go through several coaches. You can't name a losing organization that doesn't do it, and to the point where they get to someone that they can start to settle in and put 5, 6, 7 years of a program together. That's when you can start winning. So, you know, looking at some of these coach decisions, the one that kind of got me was Napoleon's, because if any group deserved to kind of keep their act together, and get the benefit of the doubt, it would be the group that's running all the football-related operations, you know, for Indianapolis. You know, Peyton Manning goes out, you're probably the best quarterback in the league, the team that's most dependent on their quarterback because of the style that they play. Defense is built to win when you're ahead. It's not built to play 10-3 games, and then you lose him. And he's not an easy person to replace. What do you guys think about what happened in Indy?
Cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it. I want winners.
Well, I'll jump in on that just because kind of parallel this with Chicago, just firing their GM today with Jerry Angelo going out, and I think you just see the overall team around what Peyton Manning has there. Again, obviously that's a unique situation. Obviously the season has been pretty horrible, and I would just say that, yeah, you know, in terms of what else is around the talent that's there. So in terms of picking the talent, obviously you see Peyton Manning was the franchise and is the franchise. And, you know, I'm not sure if it's a coaching philosophy or it's a GM philosophy where you have everything dependent on one player. And then if that player goes down, you see what happens. And just kind of parallel with Chicago here, you know, obviously losing your quarterback is a big deal. But I think you saw here in terms of, at least I'm not sure the draft history is like in Indianapolis, but you know, looking at Chicago and the Bears here, the draft history you see there, just a lot of misses on a lot of picks, and year after year of just not having guys around them and not drafting a backup quarterback. I think same thing is said for Indianapolis, that, you know, you look around and you see some teams that are able to manage. When Brady went out that 1 year, they brought in Castle and did enough. You know, you see the Packers backup quarterback, you see quarterbacks backing up around the league who are able to do enough at least. And just to have nothing there to, after all these years, to kind of have developed somebody who could be a backup is, I think is paramount. And I'm not sure why people don't pay more attention to that. It's just kind of seeing this first hand here in Chicago, but you would think there'd be more effort kind of put into that on some level. But then also looking at other players around them, in terms of, again, the team is, you know, maybe you have a bad year, you're not going to make the playoffs without Peyton Manning, but you should be able to win some games. And you know, obviously, you know, there's not enough talent around that team to win, a handful, you know, 4 or 5 games at least. And, you know, same thing happened with the Bears here. They had a great start, and then Jay Cutler goes off, and they essentially go on a, you know, 5-game losing streak, you know, and pretty much lose any playoff hope. So I think that comes back to the GM at some point. You know, where else is the other talent around that's going to help fill in some of those holes, so you're not just dependent on one player for everything?
Can't wait.
Hit it, Phil. What's your opinion? You there, Phil?
We silenced the doctor.
Okay.
I mean, I can't wait to talk about this. Ever since I saw Napoleon's get fired early today, the first thought that came to my mind is, you know what? This is paving the groundwork for the Colts to deal with Peyton Manning objectively. To put away
right.
The personal relationship That's, I mean, Napoleons are, like, we know who Napoleons are largely because of Peyton Manning, largely because of the success that they've had on Peyton Manning's watch, okay? And I think getting rid of them allows, it benefits the Colts in a couple of areas. First, the Colts have a couple of options, obviously, with this first pick. They can decide to trade the pick, which I believe was Marcus's suggestion a few weeks ago, to try to get max value, maybe get a couple of first-round picks, a couple of second-round picks over the next couple of years to help build their team in other spots, okay? They can also keep Luck and try to move Peyton. And in order to get max value in either one of those three situations, they have to be able to call the other team's bluff. The other teams have to really believe that the Colts can do any one of those three options and not be afraid to hurt Peyton Manning's feelings or to have this perception that they treated him dirty. And with Napoleon's not there, I think that's going to allow the Colts, whoever they bring in, is less. They're not as likely to have this close tie with Peyton Manning like Napoleon's did. So that was the first thing I noticed about this move. The second thing that came out, you know, that I saw with this move is that they're trying to do this more from a business perspective, okay? And they're kind of letting the fans know that, hey, we may be going in rebuilding mode right now. We're starting over. And whoever comes in, we're going to allow them to put their fingerprint on what direction we're going into. So if this thing goes wrong and we have to fire Napoleons next year, we're not going to have somebody coming in picking up the pieces.
I think, I mean, you're, I mean, that is, that's RSG analysis right there, man. That I could even go after that one. I mean, I think you hit it right on the head. And I in some ways, I got to give credit to Irsay, you know, that he's not, he didn't get caught up with it. He's making a business decision. You know, he's not paying for past performance. He's trying to figure out what the next 20 years are going to look like and who's in the best position to help him think about the next 20 years of the organization. I think that's amazing, that analysis in terms of what's happening with that. Mo, the other GM, because this is another strategy. I see these teams getting rid of the coaches, but it's one of the strategies, sometimes get rid of GM and keep the coach. I know you're a Chicago Bears guy. Chicago Bears are this team that you can see them going to the Super Bowl, you can see them going to the gutter. What's the next move for the Bears? They frustrate you. Talk to me about the Bears. I'm listening closely
for
this one.
Well, that's the point of that. You said, I'm not sure if they fired the coach in Indianapolis. I'm kind of curious to see what happened with that situation as well. But as you were kind of talking before as well about the coaching situation and some of these coaches earlier, that the Bears have, you know, for better or for worse, have kind of hung their hat with Lovie Smith as, you know, as the guy they want to stick with. And so you kind of see he survived the firings. And, you know, for a while, it's like that Angelo and Lovie Smith are pretty much at hatchet to hip. You know, I think that personally that it probably was time for everybody to be cleaned out there. You know, the Bears went to the Super Bowl in 2005-2006 season. Lost to the Colts in that game, and they had the youngest defense in the league at that time. You know, didn't go back to the playoffs again until last year. And, you know, last year was kind of the year before, you know, for the last season. You know, they pretty much had said it was kind of a do-or-die kind of season. And, you know, they put some things together, you know, made it happen. And, you know, this year, you know, again, they were kind of rolling pretty well for a while there until Cutler got hurt. So, you know, I think Lovie Smith is a good coach. You know, I think they've identified him as a guy who's probably done pretty well. There's a lot of talk about him in terms of his record. He's, you know, about 15 games over 500 for his career. And he kind of threw out his first year. And he's kind of, you know, just kind of getting into the league and knowing what's happening. You know, he's probably, you know, well over 20 games over 500 for his career. So they look at the talent and you look at the lack of drafting. So you say, they've kind of said, okay, I think they got a good coach here, but the GM has not even put the good talent under him in terms of what you see is happening around the league. And, I think, you know, every situation is different, but you look at, you know, as look at Tampa Bay and what they're dealing with Atlanta and New Orleans. You get the Bears dealing with the Packers, and now Detroit finally got their act together. So you got two teams ahead of you who are, you know, younger, looking more prominent, have, you know, big stars, the quarterback position and receiver position. And you look at your team, it's like, okay, well, what have you been doing to kind of address the situation and seeing what's going on around you? And, you know, everybody knows, you know, the best way to get to the playoffs is to win your division first. And, you know, the wild card's kind of just a, you know, crapshoot. So, yeah, so I think that, you know, I think Lovie Smith is a good coach, but, you know, I'm not necessarily in love with him in terms of some of his decisions he's made as well over the years. So, but I just think it's a good philosophy. I think you said, you mentioned about Bill Cowher. I think the Bears Foundation or the organization has tried to be like that in terms of looking at, you know, some of the most successful organizations in the past have kept their head coaches for a long time and kept that stability there and kind of rode through the waves with them a little bit. So I think, you know, Lovie Smith gets a lot out of his players, but, you know, I think some of the things he's made in terms of coaching decisions, those kind of things, it still brings up a lot of questions and it's very frustrating. But I think they feel like, you know, what's the alternative? So if you think you've got a pretty good guy, you keep that guy around. And maybe that's what's happening with, you know, North Turner and other places like that where you say, well, he may not be doing the best job, but, you know, who's the alternative going to be that you really can think of that's going to be better? So you might keep the guy you have right now and try to ride it out with him as long as you can.
That's right. And if you look at, you know, Minnesota just hired took one of their guys and now he's the GM there. And, you know, they're not too many players, you know, away you know, from being, you know, probably being an effective team as well. So I think people are kind of seeing a lot on the horizon. We'll get back to this topic, but our second point in 500 Black Hand Side, since we can stay in that division, Matt Flynn put up somebody said Tecmo Bowl numbers, numbers. And so now you got this conversation about the system I love it. You know, Trent Dilfer was talking about responding to this, you know, as they talk about Rodgers. You know, with the Flynn's performance, you know, what do y'all think about its impact on Rodgers' MVP? And then in terms of him, you know, how does it help him in terms of compensation that he might be having here coming up? What are your opinions on this conversation that's been happening in Green Bay? Phil, I'll go with you first.
I don't have facts to back this up.
So I don't have facts to back this up. But, I mean, Matt Flynn, I mean, let's do a bio blast on this cat, okay? Matt Flynn was a seventh-round pick out of LSU 9 seasons ago, okay? He played behind Jamarcus Russell at LSU. He led the team to the national championship in his only year as a starter in 2003. He's been with the Packers for the past 5 years. One of the things that I looked at is the Packers aren't actually in a position to get compensation back from this guy unless they do some kind of sign and trade, which, again, with the salary cap structure and how signing bonuses stay with the team, even though the player leaves, that's very unlikely to happen in the NFL because his contract will be over when the season's over. You know, I kind of see Flynn, like I kind of see the Packers developing this network of quarterbacks, kind of like, you know, like Mo said earlier, how the Patriots did with Matt Castle, where you get guys that are drafted low. They fit, like, you kind of have a mold of, okay, this guy's really raw right now, but we can make him into a player, especially if we have time and he's not forced into playing right away. I don't buy into the whole thing that Rodgers is a system quarterback. I don't. What I do buy into is that Rodgers is in a great situation, and he makes this great situation even better, okay? He's got a lot of talent around him. The offensive line is much, much improved. You know, 13 months ago, Aaron Rodgers was out because of a concussion. Aaron Rodgers was getting sacked almost as much as Jay Cutler was. this time, you know, about a year ago, midway through the season last year. So the offensive line is much improved. The Packers have a ton of weapons offensively. Even the running game. I mean, think about what Rodgers has done with a subpar running game. That's the scary thing for me right there. So with Matt Flynn coming in, throwing for almost 500 yards, beating an explosive Detroit team this past Sunday, I don't hold that against Rodgers. I think Rodgers is a clear-cut MVP. So I mean, that's my position on the matter. And again, I don't have facts to back this up.
Mo?
What was that?
Oh, I was going to say, what do you think about Flynn?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think he definitely made himself a buttload of money. Yeah, I was looking at that, too, that yeah, he's definitely not going to – I don't think he's under contract next year, so the Packers aren't going to be in any position to keep him unless they want to pay him some money, which he probably won't do. But, you know, he had a good – when Rodgers got hurt last year, he had a nice showing against New England last year in a game that they were pretty close in but lost after that one game Rodgers was out last year. After getting hurt in Detroit, and you know, to get Detroit is not necessarily a great team in terms of their defense, but I think you're seeing that you know, the guy who come in obviously put those kind of numbers up are not just a fluke. So you know, I think that is, you know, does it mean anything about Rodgers? I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, all the greatest quarterbacks that are out there today and of all time probably could fit in any system. So, you know, Joe Montana wasn't just a West Coast quarterback. I mean, I think he can play in any kind of system. Marino, Elway, all those guys. I think, you know, great players are going to do great things in any kind of system, you know, that's going to, you know, accentuate their things that they can do. So I think that's, you know, kind of what comes first. I think the great player comes first. Then the coaches who are good coaches are going to find a good system to put him into that's going to make their things, make their assets the best that they can be. So, yeah, so I think that's definitely, you know, Rodgers is still, you know, up there for MVP candidacy, and I think that won't hurt him at all.
Okay. On our third point on five on the Black Hand side, before I go to that, what I want to get on the last point I want to say, why don't I do this, because we didn't cover it, is – Rodgers the MVP. Given that, does the performance affect any of his MVP, you know, votes? Either one of you can take that.
I think so. I mean, I think that you know, 15-1 and. You know, just, I mean, with something with them, like, what, six interceptions, I think, to, I'm not sure how many touchdown passes he has this year, you know, over 40 for sure. So, you know, doing it week in and week out pretty much. And, you know, he's definitely the, you know, I think the thing that's propelling them, because he's playing at such a high level with quarterback ratings. Like you said, it was the highest, at least, I don't know if it was before last week, but I think that he had, you know, a chance of, you know, finishing with one of the highest quarterback ratings of all time. So I think, you know, you look at the history of, you know, all the great quarterbacks have been, especially in the last this decade, even with Brady and Manning and, you know, Brees and some of these guys who have been playing really, really great, that for him to have the highest quarterback rating is just, you know, phenomenal. And I think he's got to be the MVP, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You agree with that? Okay.
Yeah, I agree with him. I mean, his touchdown to interception ratio is ridiculous. It's like 7-1. He's thrown for 45 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. I mean, that's just out of this world. So, you know, I think team success also does go a bit, or it goes too much, in my opinion, into the MVP discussion. You know, we talk about this quite a bit in baseball, where baseball writers really have this bias towards teams, players that are on teams that make the playoffs. I mean, that's why Matt Kemp didn't win it this past year, the MVP. But in football, I think that's also the situation. We don't talk about it as much. This team went 15-1. I mean, it's one of the best seasons ever. You know, this far in terms of the regular season. And plus, you know, if you have to pick one reason why they did that, he's that reason. So I think he's the most valuable player.
Well, and this kind of flips into our third point. Is this the greatest season ever for quarterback play? When you think about Rodgers, Breeze, Brady, Cam's performance, you know, where do you think this in terms of just great quarterback? Do you consider this the greatest season ever for quarterbacks? We go to you, Mo.
That's a good point. I mean, I think there definitely could be a case made for that. I think, you know, obviously the league has changed so much, and you know, I think it's great to see the Breeze breaks Marino's record. I think it maybe it's two things. I mean, it makes you really, you know, think that, you know, obviously Drew Breeze is an amazing quarterback. Also makes me kind of have more respect for what Dan Marino did. You know, if that was 20-25 years ago, if you put those kind of numbers in a different kind of system, a different kind of NFL than it is nowadays. But I think, you know, it definitely can vote for that. I think that all three of those guys, Rodgers and Breeze and Brady, were all close to breaking that record as well. You know, Cam Newton is an up-and-coming, different kind of quarterback. You know, some other guys didn't have great years, but, you know, I think, you know, there's still a lot of great quarterbacks. You know, Eli Manning out there is having a really pretty good year. You know, I think that, you know, there's a couple other quarterbacks who have had, you know, okay years that are still kind of making some big things happen. So, you know, I think, you know, it definitely could be a case for that, especially with the three headliners there and Cam Newton kind of doing it, you know, in a couple of different ways with, you know, through the air and on his feet that, you know, I'm sure a very strong case we made for that in terms of having different quarterbacks do what they're doing at the same time and all kind of be up there. That's upper echelon. It's worthy.
All right, Phil, I got a comment on this one after y'all two get it out there. So, Phil, what do you think?
I mean, without having the statistical analysis in front of me, I would argue that, yeah, this is probably one of the greatest seasons for quarterback play in recent memory or probably ever. I think there's a few reasons for that. Teams are passing more than ever. The rules reward teams to pass more. From a personnel,
you can't touch receivers. You
that's
can't
right.
touch
that's
receivers.
Right.
And for me, that's right. why I look at the – yeah, I'm sorry with that. But that's my big thing. The defense is handicapped. This is like flag football now.
Yeah.
I think right. Go ahead, Phil.
You know, I know Mo is a great defensive back at the college level. It probably burns you up every time you see that pass interference flag come out.
You know it.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, think about that in a league on quarterbacks. All the rules in terms of protecting them, receivers now, there's less of an intimidation factor going across the middle. I know Anquan Boldin is like, why weren't these helmet-to-helmet rules in place 5 years ago when I had my jaw wired shut, you know?
Right.
But, I mean, think about the Chris Johnson situation. If there was a quarterback who put up numbers, Drew Brees just broke the record, okay, just came close a few years before this. Chris Johnson ran for 2,000 yards last year. If Drew Brees was having, like, we all agree that Chris Johnson deserved his money, okay? But if you think about how there's an emphasis on running backs having a short shelf life, running backs kind of being irreplaceable where quarterbacks are, you know, I think all that speaks to why there's such an emphasis on pass play.
Yeah. And I mean, you think about when Marino was playing, I mean, you think about those Bears defenses, Giants defenses, where they could hammer you. And the numbers he was putting up against that type of competition, you know, guys back then and what they were doing, and the Montanas of the world, you know, the Warren Moons. I mean, you know, when the receivers, because, you know, folks like Chris Carter and all these guys had to get folks off of them.
because they could put their hands on him and could hit him coming across the middle. I mean, even as long, you remember when Keyshawn got hit and he had a delayed fallout across the middle, went to sleep?
Yeah.
Those cats got to be mad as can be. They could have put up Hall of Fame numbers, but then they first 3 years. I'm a little suspect. I think there's like grade, you know, like in academics we talk about grade inflation. I think there's stat inflation. We can't get caught up with it.
We're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
That's what we're talking about. Grade inflation. Not for real. And so that's the stuff that I'm not quite ready. It's hard for me to do it, particularly as a former defensive player. And I see how clean they get the look back there. Boy, it just kills me, eats me up. So I don't know if I can get it. I think these are great players. I think they have to handle a lot of information at the line. I think they do an incredible job. I'm not sure if I'm going to go with the greatest season yet. Playoff sleepers. The game changer, and overrated. And his sleeper for the playoffs were Atlanta was his sleeper, and the overrated team for the playoffs was the Patriots. Do you guys have a playoff?
Talk about playoffs? You kidding me?
So who do y'all have as your playoff sleeper? That team that no one's really thinking about that you think can make that kind of run that Green Bay rant made, and that team that everybody's thinking about that, you know, in the last couple of years we've had some first round just fallouts where folks are just folded like wet noodles. Who for y'all is that y'all have as that sleeper or that overrated team? Why don't we go to you, Phil?
Sleeper is the Lions, overrated is the Packers. Yep, I'm done.
Ooh, the Packers. So I understand the sleeper with the Lions, you know, because they can score and their defense can show up. You know, talk to me about the Packers. Why would you have them as the overrated? I think I know where you're going, but talk to me.
Well, I think we have the Packers up on this high pedestal. And to me, they give up too much, like too many points. And Aaron Rodgers can have a bad game. He can have a bad game. Passes can get tipped. If they're in a situation where they turn over the ball 3 or 4 times in a game, with as many points that their defense gives up, their defense is built on a bend don't break philosophy, and they depend a lot on the takeaway. So, to me, that's kind of like a team that depends on their three-point shot. There's going to be days where you're going to get cold. There's going to be days where, you know, the three-point shot, the outside shot is not going in, and you need to have somebody that can, you can dump it down in the post, and they can get you the free throw line.
So, you try to say they do. You're saying they do. They do. They're the Duke. you say they do. Of a few years
in
back.
A way.
That's what you try to say.
In a way,
huh?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Duke fan, so you have a hard time for me admitting that. Okay.
I got
Duke.
Fans online.
Duke.
Duke loved that three. You said that. That's what I'm saying. You play that fast game. Go ahead. Okay.
Yeah. So, it was the Packers that struggled with the running game. And they depend a lot on the precision of Aaron Rodgers. And, again, Rodgers has shown himself capable to play at an even higher level in the playoffs. But he's human. And we've seen his receivers struggle. I mean, not the Kalamazoo kid, of course, Jennings, but we've seen some of his receivers struggle holding on to the ball. So, again, I think the bar is so high. In reality, in my mind, they are the strongest team out there, but they're not that far away from the pack, as some teams would suggest.
Okay. Mo. Overrated sleeper.
All right, I'm gonna give you my overrated sleeper here. I'm gonna give you my picks here for the week, and then I'm gonna step out for a second here. But I will say my sleeper is gonna be the Giants as a team that's coming in similar to the Packers last year, had to fight their way to get into the playoffs. The Giants have the best pass rush of any team out there from the front four. You know, Eli Manning is a Super Bowl winning quarterback who's got underrated weapons with young Victor Cruz. You know, he's got Keith Nix and you know, some good weapons out there on the outside too. So I see them as a team that could definitely make some things happen and cause some problems in the playoffs. With in the NFC, you know, a lot of great, you know, looking at the Saints and the Packers as the two top teams there, but both of those teams, you know, I think can be had on their offensive line. So if they get pass rush in there, especially the Packers with their injuries, could cause some problems there. So overrated, I'm going to go, I think I got to go with the Packers too. I mean, I think that, you know, it's kind of hard to say that just because, you know, they have such a great year, but I think that, yeah, the fact that they defense is definitely has not been as good as it has been last year, and they're having to, you know, not getting as many turnovers as they did before. They've been hit hard in their secondary. I think, you know, Woodson's, you know, a couple steps slower now, and all they have is Clay Matthews out there, and, you know, they don't, no one, not Clay Matthews, but they get Matthews out there, and he's the only pass rusher they got, so teams are pretty much doubling him up, and no one else is really stepping up. So I think that you get into the playoffs, you got to have a shootout, and, you know, just one mistake. And I think the Saints is, you know, a team that could definitely take them out, and the Giants is a team that could probably do it. So so I got a couple of, you know, sleeper kind of picks there. I'm going to give you my picks here. As I've been told Bill D earlier that, you know, on our show, we've been doing picks this year, picking college and pros, and I came out the champion of our group there this year, picking 63%. So even if you are interested in making a wager on some of these games, you might want to listen up here. So I've got Houston, just in case. Houston and the Bengals. Houston's giving away 3 points against the Bengals. Bengals going on the road. Houston has been definitely hit hard by the injury bug. Quarterback play has definitely been you know, an issue for them. Andre Johnson also has been having a lot of issues with his injury situation as well, with his hamstring and everything. I'm looking for upset here. The Bengals going down. So to the Houston. Houston has you know, had a decent defense this year, but it's been kind of having more and more problems. The Bengals' young offense has been making some strides, and their defense is pretty good as well. So taking the Bengals and the points on the road down in Houston this weekend.
Mo.
Yeah, I want winners.
Yeah, hey, you listen up, baby. Let's get done. Saints in Detroit. Got Saints giving away 10.5 points versus Detroit. Saints are obviously a very tough team at home, in the dome there. Detroit, you know, coming off a great performance against the Packers in terms of putting up a lot of points. They've gotten back on track with Calvin Johnson, getting enough out of the running game with Kevin Smith, and defense is getting Sue back a little more focused, is doing okay, but not necessarily great. You know, Detroit in their first playoff game, and, you know, who knows how long. You got to give them credit for being there. They're going to be hyped up, but I don't think they're necessarily ready, especially their defense, going to be ready for the Saints. But I do think it's going to be a shootout kind of game. I do think they're going to put up some points. So I'm going to split a pick here. The Saints are going to win this game, but they will not cover the 10.5. So, if you're looking to make a pick out there, a special pick there, Detroit on the road, get 10.5. It's a big number, especially in the playoffs, to give up. So look at Detroit to cover that, to get that 10.5 and to cover that margin. Next, we've got the Giants in Atlanta. You disagree with what I'm saying? Hey, it's, the numbers don't lie, maybe 63%. So
I want winners.
You got the Giants at home versus Atlanta. Atlanta coming on the road there. Dome team going outside is never usually a good situation in January. Giants have been playing well late, you know, to get back into the playoff run here. Again, I think that Atlanta, Michael Turner, having my fantasy team, did not have as great a year as he usually has. And Atlanta, I think getting Julio Jones may be a good move for them in the future run, but this year I think they're still not quite where they want to be at without having some balance with Michael Turner. They've been kind of relying too much on the pass. I think that's going to play into the Giants' hands with their pass rush. And I'm taking the Giants and the 3, giving away 3 at home. And last but not least, you got Pittsburgh versus Tebow and the Broncos. Rashard Mendenhall is out for the year. Pittsburgh has been winning of late, but not doing it very pretty. The Broncos have found a way to kind of keep a lot of games close. Tebow has been getting exposed a little bit more lately. Pittsburgh is giving away 8.5 points on the road, which is a really huge number. So, again, I think Pittsburgh is going to win this game, but I don't think they're going to cover the 8.5. So, I'm thinking the Broncos with that 8.5 point spread right there to get some points to stay close at home. So, there you got the picks there. And that's what I have for this week, boys. I guess like I heard some disagreements out there in the crowd there, so we'll have to see what you guys think about that.
Hey,
wow,
hey,
winning.
Mo, you are Mo. We want to thank you coming from the Hallmark's Gimme a Mo show. We have Mo on tonight. Mo, we want to thank you for being with us, spending some time with us tonight. Definitely appreciate it. We'll hear more from Mo on Real Sports Guys in the future. Always, buddy. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, guys, always checking me out. Love what you guys are doing, and much respect, much love, and always looking to catch you guys on the flip side.
All right, man. Take it easy.
All right. Peace.
This has been a great show. My sleeper. I've been thinking about this. I think Mo hit on it. I was caught between two teams for different reasons, but I'm going to go with the Giants. I think they're getting healthy at the right time. I know I had the debate with the game changer about Eli Manning and Rivers. Eli Manning, in terms of the fourth quarter touchdowns, has really stepped up and is doing something. And this is a team, coach, staff, and players that know how to play together at this time of the season. And they got the right kind of folks to play against teams like New Orleans and to play against teams like Green Bay, where you got to have somebody up front who can do some work. And I think they're getting healthy, and I think they're figuring out how to maximize and guys are beginning to make plays. So, it's like Coughlin has 9 lives, man. It's like every time you think he's down, he's back up. He's showing up at you. And so that's the overrated. Until they prove otherwise, because I think people forget, but until they prove otherwise, it's the New England Patriots.
Wow.
They've been playing on a lot of old stock. They've been playing a lot of old stock for a while. Got beat at home last year by the Jets. There's a little kink in the armor, and until they can prove, and you can't. I think this is where Green Bay and this catches up to you in the Patriots. You can't have the 31 and 32nd worst defenses. And at this time of year and get it done. I think Green Bay has a few more playmakers who can kind of put it together at a time. They can, it's kind of like, when you know you're in the NCAA tournament, when you have, more TV timeouts, you get to play the game a little bit different in the playoffs because of TV timeouts and control tempo a little bit differently sometimes in the playoffs. I think Green Bay's got more they can do with that. Than the Patriots, but I just think until the Patriots prove that they can do something, they're overrated.
Let me ask you this about the Patriots, D. How concerned are you about them, considering they went behind big the last 2 weeks? Most recently against the Buffalo, they were down 21-0 before they scored 49 unanswered points to win.
Yeah. And part of that is that they don't – and this is what Green Bay was able to do, and I think they can still do, is they got enough of a running game. Green Bay, they do – they got Grant, they got some guys. They got some guys that can kind of commit to a running game if they really need to. That's what they were able to do last year. The Patriots are the football's version of Phoenix under D'Antoni, right? little regular season, but the type of ball it takes to win in the playoffs they don't quite have. And you, and the part of it is that you just can't understand why, how Belichick hasn't figured out. He hasn't drafted well. He hasn't got the production out of defense, which is he hasn't been able to replace those vets. And I mean, he's gotten past. And so I think that's in playing from behind and a lot. I mean, I think that they're shaky. And the, some of the teams they're going to have to face, like the Ravens and the Steelers and some of these other, even like Cincinnati and some of these teams who got who can defend and get up and bump and run because they don't have a guy who's a deep threat. So if you got some folks who can get up and get physical with those tight ends, bump them, play that strategy, you're going to give them problems offensively. Their defense can't really stop you. So I hate to say it, but until they prove us otherwise, I got to say that they overrated. Can't, you know, it hurts. It pains me. It pains me, but I got to do that.
I mean, does it? How much does it actually pain you, though, with you being a Steelers fan?
Well, you know, I grew up in Ann Arbor. You know, y'all know I worked at, you know, Wisconsin, but I grew up in Ann Arbor, and I like Brady. You know, I felt like Brady got shafted with Henson. I felt like at Michigan they did him wrong. I thought he played well. I love the swag he came out with early in his career. So I got a lot of love for Brady. And that's what kind of keeps, you know, somewhat sentimental. I've kind of liked, because I like Brady. Obviously, I'm a Steelers fan, and so when they face each other, I'm looking for him to get crushed in that game. But, you know, and I think, yeah, I like the way Belichick, so they were asking a question the other day about injury. And Belichick was looking at the guy like, well, we answered that question. And they kept pushing him on Brady's injury. Did we answer that question? He looked over at the guy. Did we answer that question? Next question. I mean, the cat doesn't give you anything at all. And so, you know, I think that's going to be a big kind of pressure for him is that, you know, at some point, does he come under fire? You know, that's got to be a big question.
Yeah, I'd like to see. This team was so much different when they had a deep threat. And, you know, I can't say they don't have a deep threat right now. They have a different type of deep threat with their tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
But when Randy Moss was doing his thing.
That's right.
He just gave this offense a totally different look. Okay? And right now they don't have it. Teams have had success when they can lock down Welker, okay,
yeah,
or limit Welker to not getting much after the catch. Right now, they just have to defenses have to figure out what to do with these two tight ends.
Yeah.
Gronkowski, he's had an excellent year for a tight end. I just think they're going to be playing playoff caliber teams, obviously, in the playoffs. And I think these teams will figure out how to shut out these tight ends. Tight ends are tight ends for a reason.
Yes. And one of the things, I mean, you would appreciate this. You're a defensive guy. And one of the things, what I loved about Belichick when he coached defense, because I don't see, there's a lot of things that just defensive coaches in the NFL don't coach. That's a lost art that Belichick always used to coach. I used to always watch this and appreciate the fact that he made his outside linebackers or folks do it, that, you know, jamming the tight end. You remember that? I mean, we're going to disrupt your route. You always put a hand on the tight end, right? And Belichick always did that. The problem he's going to have is that he's got two defensive teams in the playoffs who coach that kind of stuff. The Steelers and the Ravens are going to do that. And I would say Cincinnati going to do that. I mean, that's a lost art. If you watch a lot of teams, watch the NFL game, and watch how many teams let the tight end just release off the line with no hit.
Right.
Like nothing. And what I used to admire about a Belichick defense is that never happened with his defenses. If you watch his linebackers or anybody on there, those tight ends always got hit off the line. They always disrupted your route when you're getting out of it.
And you got to be able to do that. And the reason why he's been taking advantage of it is because that's something that they don't teach anymore. And so his tight ends can get off and run free. I've been kind of watching that. I don't know if you paid attention to that at all, but that's something I've always admired about his defenses, but I don't see much. Do you see that much when you watch the games?
You know, I don't know. I mean, that's a good point that you're bringing up. I haven't noticed it, but what you're saying doesn't surprise me.
My defensive coordinator in high school, in the defense coordinator, I mean, just he played with Tony Dorsett. You know, he played, you know, it's one of those things where you just, and it was something that was just instilled in me in great defenses. That's what you did. It's part of disrupting route on the way to doing what you need to do. And I just noticed NFL teams don't do that. And it's a wonder why, and offensive coordinators, I think, begin to figure it out. These tight ends can run free, right? They're not going to get disrupted, and people just figure it out. I think it's going to take the defenses time to catch up. And the great teams have, so where New England struggled is these teams like Pittsburgh and some of these other teams who have some personnel, but also have a defensive philosophy. I figured out we're going to put hands on you. Or they normally do it, and so it was easy for them to make an adjustment with that and disrupting the route. And when they do that, what can you go to next? Like, great, my defensive coordinators used to say, take away the top three things that a team can do. Most folks don't want to go to number four. And that's another thing that Belichick always used to do. You could tell. He always would take away the top three things you can do because most teams don't want to go to number four. They don't have enough practice time for number four. So they can't do the top three things. Now you put them in the areas where they're uncomfortable. And so that's something that I think New England is now those things are being inflicted on them, and it'd be interesting to see how they make that adjustment because they, like you said, their deep threat are their tight ends. But if we start disrupting your tight ends, and go out on the middle, then who do you go to an outside? Do you have a running game? That's where I think they're struggling.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can give up 30 points in the playoffs and really honestly, earnestly believe you can win.
Yeah. So that's my your Super Bowl favorites. Game changer had Packers over the Ravens. Who do you have?
I'm going Packers over the Ravens as well. Despite what I just said earlier about the Packers, I think they are the best team. I also think they're overrated, but I don't see anybody on their side of the bracket beating them. I think the Super Bowl, though, they have a chance to lose. But if I had to pick right now, I would say the Packers over the Ravens.
And when we talked about this a while ago, I had the Packers against the Steelers. And so I got to figure out whether or not with Ben's injury, whether or not they're going to be ready for that.
And Mendenhall's off.
Yeah. But I think they can figure out how to overcome that. That's why I'm not as worried about. I think they have some options about how they might can develop that running game and what they've been doing offensively. But I probably might change that. I got to go with my analyst mind. I would say Packers. I'm not quite sure the Ravens yet, but I guess I would say Packers or the Ravens would be my favorite for it.
Well, you're a president of the Joe Flacco fan club, correct?
That's the thing. Joe hasn't figured out if he's gonna be able to do it in the big moment. But when I look at the playoff landscape, if you don't take the Patriots with the Ravens being in a position where they could have some games, maybe this is when he grows up. You know, that's kind of what I'm looking at. You know, maybe he's growing up this year. Not a big fan. That's why I was taking forget it. I'm gonna go back. Packers over the Steelers. I just got a feeling that Ben gonna figure out how to do it. I'm going to go back to my original pick. I'm not a Flacco fan. Huh?
Joe Flacco got you nervous, huh?
Yeah, I just don't you know, he hasn't matured to where I think Eli Manning matured. I haven't seen it. Have you seen
him? Honestly,
I mean, he's too inconsistent for me, and he doesn't make enough big throws. But the way Ray Rice is doing it, and with that defense, I don't think they need – if Flacco plays as well as Sanchez played last year in the playoffs, I mean, that's that's an area we don't even – we haven't even got on yet. Yes, but
– we're going to hit that.
If Sanchez – if Flacco can play that well, I think that the Ravens are the best team in the AFC right now, especially with that defense. You know, I sat there and watched that defense get after a really good 49er team. And they sacked poor Alex Smith, what was it, 9 times? I mean,
yes.
Suggs is playing at a level where he might be the defensive player of the year. I mean, that defense is playing well. And I think they did the right thing to give Ray Lewis that rest towards the middle of the season.
Mm-hmm. But I think that in the AFC Championship, they're going to have to play against an elite player. And so can he make elite plays? He's got to make 2 or 3 plays. Can he do that?
I don't know. I mean, he doesn't have the weapons, in my opinion. I mean, Anquan Boldin's had a solid season, but he's no longer number one. But he's by far the best receiver they have out there. He's the best option. And honestly, I think the way you beat the Ravens is you stack the box, take away Rice, and you make Flacco beat you. And I think that's the question. Can Flacco do that?
And you know that's definitely going to happen. Like, they're going to stack the box, and they're going to make Flacco beat you. So the question is, can he make those throws? And that's where my challenge has been with him, that I just haven't seen him make that play, kind of like New England. Until you do it, I'm going to have to defer. So you can prove me wrong. You are who your playoff record says you are.
That's right.
That's about all I can do with
they
that.
Are who we thought they were.
So that's pretty much my approach to that. That was 5 on the black hand side. But before we move forward, you hit a real good topic. What's your opinion on what's been happening in New York with the Jets? And what would you do with Mark Sanchez? What would be your evaluation? Where are you with that? And what do you think about the coach and the meltdown? And assess what you think about what's happening with the Jets. Let's say this is going to be our first segment of Off the Dome. Let's just go with Off the Dome. This is going to be our first segment of that.
Well, here's the problem. Rex Ryan is a player's coach. He's motivating. He pushes the envelope. And all that is cool when you're winning. When you're losing, now all of a sudden you got to find other words to describe him. And they're mostly going to be negative. Instead of him being a player's coach, maybe his shit is not tight enough. See, winning takes care of all that. And, you know, you see Santonio Moss doing what he did. Sanchez, I don't know if he's the guy. So Sanchez, this is his third complete season. And the team has won in spite of him the first 2 years. This year they lost because of him, among other things, but he was right up there. I think you have to take a long look to say, is this guy a franchise quarterback? Even guys who have struggled, such as a Flacco in the big moment, they still have been fairly consistent. Like, you know what you're going to get from them. Sanchez, you don't know. And I think what happened with the Jets this year is they went away from their philosophy. They had a philosophy of run the ball. Run the ball, throw the ball 15, 20 times a game max. But we're going to pound the rock. They got away from that. Sanchez threw the ball, what, 50-something times, 3 times this year?
Yep.
That's not who they are. That's not what they're built for. And you can kind of see that Rex got away from it, but he didn't really want to get away from it. It was almost like somebody convinced him, like, listen, man, this is the way you got to win. You can't win with the wishbone now in 2011. And Rex is kind of like, well, it's worked, but it's not going to work this year. And so it seems like he reluctantly went away from a philosophy that's worked for him. And so that, to me, that was the biggest issue with the Jets this year. How about yourself?
Yeah, and I think that when you look at it, Sanchez has had some performances. What gives you hope is that he's performed in big moments in the playoffs. Playoff record is incredible. He's had some fourth quarter comebacks. He's done some things. I think you hit it right. They had a philosophy. They didn't have a piece of the philosophy. They didn't have a sustained running game. You know, they had piecemeal running attack. They didn't. And so part of it I might even add is that part of it might be Schottenheimer's, the way he set the offense up for him, and how he might set him up and put him in position to make plays. So I think some stuff, I think he didn't make enough of a jump this year, but I also think there's some system issues and some other issues in terms of the running game that they didn't have in terms of some of the play calling I watched, which is looking crazy. So that I think is a whole bunch. And I think with Rex as well, that some of that stuff runs short. You can't have some of the stuff they had going on. You can't have, you know, San Antonio Holmes and what's happening there. And they're going to end up probably, you know, shipping him out. You got to get some of that stuff. You got to get on the head, because if you win and that stuff works, but you can't keep doing it. So part of it is, you know, they're going to have to come up, either get back to what they do well, running the football and having him throw and play and those certain things. That means they got to beef with the running game and get a more consistent running attack. And that means that, you know, you're going to have to think about, you got to evaluate your backfield. And do you got the people, you know, is Green the kind of guy that you got that can sustain that? Can he be that kind of guy that you can give it to? You got to really think about where you go with that receiving core. Yeah, make sure you shift it up. Are you going to stick with San Antonio? Are you going to give him all season, get his act together, come back ready to do what he needs to do? I mean, it's all that stuff you have to figure out, but they got to make a step forward because some of these other teams are catching up. And at some point, Sanchez was hurt most by this offseason lockout, because part of, I think, what Spurs didn't, that hurt his growth, was that he didn't have this offseason and a chance to take it to that next level. And so part of it you got to look at is when you have a full offseason and how might that impact him for next year. Because I think he was hurt a lot, particularly with some of these new pieces. I think they were hurt a lot with this offseason. Certain people needed this offseason. And I think he was one of those guys who really got hurt by the lockout, because I think that would have helped him a lot with his growth. A short training camp and stuff like that I think didn't help him at all either. So I think he's made enough of great plays. I think he's going to get some support. I do think you draft somebody to push him. I do think you put somebody behind him that pushes him, let him know that, or you bring somebody in and say, it's going to, you know, let him know that you messed up. We got somebody to put in. I do think they should do that. You know, maybe that's a place where you could have a Russell Wilson go. You know, someone like that who,
yeah,
you know, can step in and sound, and he's the kind of guy who can move a little bit. You know, maybe that's a good place for someone like a Russell Wilson to go if he goes football, to put pressure, who's going to compete, and push Sanchez to do what he needs to do. Because I think that was one problem that they did. They took away the competition, and I think he plays better with competition, and so they should have kept some competition on his back. How long do you think Rex has? Does he have a little bit? Does he have rope? How long does Rex have? Does he have any rope on this? What do you think? You think, you know, do they start looking at Rex after next year?
At the earliest, after next year. I think he's safe right now for this season, or this off season. I think he'll get a shot to do what he needs to do in 2012. In New York, it's hard to say. A year, 2 years. I mean, I think in every situation that's difficult to forecast, but especially in New York, because, you know, he could have a bad season, get off to a bad start, and they look bad the first three or four games, and there could be enough pressure for Woody Johnson to get rid of Rex. You know, so I Rex is, you know, if I'm Rex, I'm going to do it my way, and I'm going to go out the way I need to go out. And so...
You said,
you know,
guns
and blades. That's right. Stick with your guns.
Say
you
hello
know,
to my little friend.
That's right. That's right. So, the Jets are, some would argue that they shouldn't have went as far as they went last year and the year before. Watching this team, they need some pass rushers, first and foremost. We talk about Sanchez, but it doesn't matter how good your defensive backs are. If you can't get pressure on that quarterback, and that's something they struggle with this year, you're going to have a tough time winning games. And defensively, playing at the level that you need to, that the Jets are accustomed to. You know, they were average against the run, they were average against the pass, and they were average passing on offense this year. That's not a winning formula, and that's not Rex's formula either.
Yeah, I agree with that. And they need to get a pass rush. Early NBA season, what are your impressions?
So I like what they're doing in Indiana and Indianapolis. Going tonight, they're 4-1. They got a nice core out there with West. Hibbert's playing well. Hansbrough is, probably got the step on, sixth man of the year so far. Collinson's playing well out there. They're doing big things. I'm surprised with Dallas. And let me take a step back. I think that the NBA is in good shape. You know, we asked this question a couple of weeks ago, and what were we talking about? We were talking about the David Stern. Did he screw up this Chris Paul trade when he didn't get to the Lakers and eventually got vetoed? Vetoed a deal to the Clippers, and it finally got done. You know, the strike. Are the fans going to go away? Similar to the NFL, we're not talking about David Stern. We're not talking about Goodell. We're not talking about the strike. And so all those things are pluses for the NBA so far. I don't think fans are overly upset. I mean, honestly, I like seeing these guys play 4 or 5 games a week. You know, I mean,
I think this is a great format.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I like it. You know, the players can gripe and whatnot, but you know what? People that get up and go to work every morning, you know, and make low to middle income type of money, don't complain to us about playing a game 3 or 4 days a week when you're used to playing it twice a week. We really don't want to hear it.
I think you hit it right. And the thing about it, these are guys who play all the time. You know, hardcore ballers, they play every day. So, you know, they can get through it. I love the action. I mean, you and I have been going back and forth with this NBA pass, which is addictive, man. They've given us the free access to it. It's been the best thing I've ever been experienced. It's like, oh, my goodness, this is hoop overload. And I love what Mark Jackson is doing out in Golden State. You know, and I think the way you build a good team is you say, look, people aren't going to come in here and get easy victories. We're going to win at home. And then if we can play 500 above on the road, we're going to be in good shape. We're going to build a winning tradition at home. I think that's key in sports. If you're going to build a winning program, make your house the toughest place to win. You know, I worked at Wisconsin, and I think, you know, both Bo Ryan and I think Alvarez did it early on, and Bielema's kind of kept that. Is that, you know, make playing in Madison, Camp Randall, Kohl's Center a tough place to play. Let's start building that. And if you look at any place that's built a great program, whether it's pro or college, they really establish that kind of home presence. And he said, you know, coming to Golden State, coming into our environment, coming into the Bay Area, Oakland, it's not going to be, you're not going to pad your stats anymore. When you come here, you're going to take an L. And you know some teams who come in there and take some L's early on, even with Curry hurt. That's been exciting to kind of watch that. And then a team that I, I knew they were going to, you know, we all are high on them. But, you know, they've been, you know, really playing hard. I mean, Durant hit that last-second shot that was crazy last week.
But Oklahoma City is trying to grow to that next level that they're trying to get. You and I were just on the phone talking about injury to Ginobili, but I saw San Antonio and the way they're playing with their style and how they've been playing. I've been impressed with what they're doing until they had this injury with Ginobili. They've been good. It's been fun, and I would say the Heat are, you know, have been establishing some things that I think long term is going to be, you know, good for them. So, you know, I think they're, you know, we got a lot of, I think the NBA is in great shape. I think when we talked about it, we said as soon as the ball goes up, you know, folks are going to forget about all that. And I think the way the season's been set up has made it easier for people to forget because there's so many games to watch in the early part of the season. Who have you been most disappointed with since you've been watching?
Memphis. Memphis Grizzlies. They showed.
I called that, didn't I? Did I call that? I called that, didn't I?
You did. And you know, I had a problem with it at the time. I argued that they would take the momentum from their playoff run, and the youth would allow them to get off to a good start, and that hasn't happened. It hasn't happened. I'm just disappointed that, you know, and part of it is Conley's been hurt. Conley played the first game or two, but he's been hurt, and he's missed the last three games. But I'm a little bit disappointed that Gay and Randolph have had a hard time playing together. And if you look at it, Zach Randolph, his game really elevated when Rudy Gay got hurt towards the middle of last season. I mean, Rudy Gay was having a heck of a year. He was having an all-NBA type of year when he got hurt. You know, maybe not first or second team, but maybe a third team all-NBA, you know, type of year. He was averaging 20 points. He was getting 9 rebounds. He was in the top 10 in blocks, top 10 in steals, and he got hurt for the rest of the season. And it just seems like they're having a hard time with Gay and Randolph in the lineup at the same time. So I'm a bit surprised that they've come out, and I think they're 1-3, 1-4 right now. I'm just a bit surprised they haven't had a better start.
Yeah, they were the team I thought was most vulnerable coming in. I thought that they would play a little bit better. I've probably been most disappointed with not really when I think about it. I think they're going to get it together. With Dallas to start, but I think they switched out some quality guys in Barea and Chandler, and you get Vince Carter and some of that, but just doesn't Delonte West. I think Delonte will be good, but you know Vince is injury prone, man. He's like phantom injury in the court. He always looks like about a step away from getting hurt on the court, and doesn't have that mental toughness that they have, but I thought Lamar would be out to prove something, and I watched a couple games and I just felt like he wasn't playing with enough dog in him, and I felt like, you know, this is an opportunity for you to really step out. If they don't let you play, but I think he'll start putting some numbers up,
He showed up out of shape. I mean, they've been pretty vocal. And, you know, Mars admitted it, but Carlisle's been pretty vocal of, hey, we got to limit this guy's minutes till he gets in shape.
Yeah. And you just can't do that. I mean, I don't know why you said about a shape. Even if you're playing with the Lakers, y'all got bounced. You should have been on it anyway. You know what I'm saying? There was no reason why he would have come. Even if he would have stayed in L.A., he should have come in with great shape, given the way they went out last year. So that's why I didn't think he was going to come in bad shape, because they got embarrassed last year. So everybody on the Lakers should have been out there, I mean, doing what they needed to do to improve their game to come back with a vengeance. So, you know, I'm surprised that he's not in shape, and that's disappointing, because he could really make some things happen this year and has a chance to be with a team that can still compete and win. So that's kind of disappointing. Well, hey, we're coming down here down the stretch. Let's get to some of the pick six
We're going to make an adjustment in one of them, and we'll get game change. We'll get Marcus's update on it because on one of the college games, because one of the ones we're supposed to talk about on one of those is actually happening tonight. So we'll make an adjustment on that when we do the pick six. But Mo did a good job of breaking it down, just like we know he did. So he kind of gave people a little bit of insight to our NFL picks. But we got the Steelers at the Broncos. Who do you got on the table?
I'm going to go with the Broncos.
I want okay. winners.
You don't go with the Broncos. You're going with T-Roll and all the stuff. It's just the aura, huh?
You know, I'd like to say, you know, I just have to put it out there that you guys laughed at me when I chose the Broncos to go to the playoffs. Just want to put that out there. And it began the season.
I will say that. It's going to be one and done because I'm with the game changer on this one. It's going to be the Steelers. So I'm going with the Steelers on this one. Lions versus the Saints. Marcus had the Saints. Mo had the Saints. Who are you going with?
The Lions, of course.
You going with the Lions? I'm going with the Saints. It just they're about to get breezed. Hope they don't start cheating. I hope they don't start up there sitting there trying to cheap shot people. Hey, Sue, don't go out like my boy, our big fella, the center of the Lakers in the playoff game. Don't go out like Bynum, walking out the arena with your shirt off.
Can't wait.
We got the Bengals against the Texans. This is an interesting matchup, man. Who do you got with that?
I got the Bengals. I mean, the Texans have just looked really bad since they lost Schaub.
Okay. Game changer is going with the Texans. I agree with you. I'm going with the Bengals. I just think that they're getting right. They got solid defense. They got a running game. That defense is really, I think, going to be the difference. They got a young quarterback, but he's focused. I think they can put together a good. And this will be a good season for the Bengals if they can just win this first round game. I think it'll be good for building on for them to build on that. So I'm going to go with the Bengals as well. We got the Falcons at the Giants.
Dirty Birds. Rise
you
up.
Want the Dirty Birds. Okay. Game changer went with the Falcons, the Dirty Birds as well. I'm going with the Giants. I'm with Mo on this one. I'm going with the Giants. I think that, like I said, there's something about the Giants. There's something about Coughlin. He got nine lives. It's kind of like he something come over him. Everybody's talking about Tebow, but you got to start looking at Coughlin. It's just they had no shot for real. I mean, people didn't think they were going to make the playoffs. Now they're in it and they're dangerous. So I like them Giants. When we look at college football, we want to make a change. I want to look at West Virginia against Clemson. If you look at West Virginia Clemson game, who would you take in that one?
Man, this is a yawner. I'm gonna go with Clemson.
You're gonna go with Clemson, and something. You remember the Clemson folks was getting all mad because Kurt Herbstreit was saying we just don't want enough. We don't want them to be the same old Clemson. And they had some games like that where they just kind of fell off at the end. I'm gonna go with West Virginia. I think it's gonna be a big game. I'm gonna go with West Virginia, and then we got the national championship, LSU against Bama, the game of it all. Kind of set the context for our conversation next week. Who you got?
I'm gonna go with Alabama. I think Alabama's offense is a bit better. And so that's why I'm
going to
go with them.
I'm going to go with LSU, the Mad Hatter. He's going to come up with something. And I think that's the only way the season will be right, if LSU wins. And if Bama wins, I'm just going to have a whole sick feeling about the season. I just,
it's hard for me to know that, you know, you didn't even win your division, you didn't play for the conference championship, and yet you had a national champion. I got to go for LSU just to feel right about the system. And that'll set the context for our conversation next week, which we want to make sure that we cover. So, you know, we want to make sure, and Phil, I want you to give a shout-out again and the plug for Dr. Sack, for the folks to remind, if we got some late people joining the show. But talk a little bit about our special guests next week.
So next week we're going to have author and scholar Alan Sack, Dr. Alan Sack, who's currently at the University of New Haven. Dr. Sack recently, a couple years ago, wrote the book Counterfeit Amateurs. And Dr. Sack is a very interesting gentleman. He was part of a national championship team in 1966 when he played at Notre Dame. And it's interesting, that 66 game, it was Notre Dame, Michigan State, and they played to a tie. Both these teams were undefeated. They were ranked 1 versus 2. And in Dr. Sack's book, he says that this was one of the first times where advertisers saw the capacity that college sports had to really be a wise investment. And he says this was one of the turning points of how the college game shift to be counterfeit amateurism, in a sense. So we're looking forward to have Dr. Sack on next week. He'll be on in the first hour of our show next week, January 10th. And, again, we're looking forward to having the author of Counterfeit Amateurs on.
Thank you. I think for us, a kind of a landmark shift. We're so excited, given the nature of what we talk about. You know, we are a show that really tries to get into the underbelly of what's happening in sports, and it's always great when we can have, you know, people who have been contributing to the conversation join us and provide us with an expert perspective on this, a scholarly perspective on the state of sports in America. And that's always been a kind of an underbelly, a theme of what we're all about. So it's good that we're able to do that next week. So the dog of the week, Game Changers dog of the week was, I can't say everything he said about, but I would say Matt Moneymaker Flynn was his game changer of the week. I would have to admit that was mine with them Tech Bowl numbers. That he created a little conversation. Anytime you can create a buzz and some conversation in the media around something like that, you know, you are doing your thing. And so I would second that one as my dog of the week. Who do you have as your dog of the week?
I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Bengals. Wow. In the beginning of the season, this team was on no one's radar to be a potential playoff team, especially with all the issues that they had with Carson Palmer, who simply said that, you know, instead of me playing, I'm just going to retire. Instead of me playing with the Bengals, I'm just going to retire. That's a pretty big statement. So I'll give it up to the Bengals for persevering. Marvin Lewis has done an excellent job out there. They're getting ready to make, you know, the play in the playoffs next week.
I would agree with you. I mean, they made a great trade. They did all the things that were considered un-Bengal-like. And they kind of just got back to the basics, kind of like my theme for the year. You know, they got back to the basics. They just got back to doing things the right way. And, you know, they still are sticking by the way they do business. No general manager, with mom and pop. So that's the dog of the week. You know, what I want to say to everybody that it's been an incredible run. We're getting into 2012, and we got a lot of special things set up for you. We want to thank all those folks who have been listening to the downloads, listening to us live, supporting the show. You know that we're the Corner Boys, we're underground, we're the resistance. We are counter to what you hear in mainstream sports. We try to offer a different perspective, bring something to you. And next week, Dr. Sack will be here as another demonstration of how we try to stretch mind, add value to your life. It's all about that real sports, guys. You got anything you want to say, Phil, to the people?
Have a great week. We'll see you next week.
All right. Peace.